This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on The Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
Well, I guess it's good news, Doc. Our key cards work. They let us back in the studio. Check us out.
Well, wonders never cease.
I'm telling you. Welcome. Thanks for being here with us. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. A lot of fallout in the Arizona State Legislature. We want to get into that. We have two very special guests. We have Howie Fisher from the Capital Media Services and our very own Jim Cross, our KTAR news sleuth. It says that on my sheet. It says news sleuth right here. And of course, always to my left is Dr. Mike O'Neill. You can get blogs, articles, op-eds, videos, etc. at mikeoneill.org. Real quickly, before we dive into this, this whole deal with the Yarnell Fire, the Hotshot Crew, Jim, I had the amazing experience of working beside you for that entire week, and I want to thank you on behalf of KTAR, behalf of Arizona, for everything you've done, everything you did during that coverage. You did an amazing job, and I was excited just to get to learn from you. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
All right, let's jump into the legislature, and Dr. Mike O'Neill.
Well, tempers were frayed here, I think, to say the least. And we've just gone through this whole episode over the governor's basically cramming the Medicaid proposal down the throats of a Republican majority. And the question I have, and I want to start with Howie, because you're down there with these guys. As I was watching this unfold, I said, regardless of the outcome, I'm wondering, can these guys ever work together again?
Well, I suppose it comes down to the fact that they have to. They have more in common than what separates them. Now, Medicaid expansion, or in the parlance of the foes, Obamacare, is one of those hot-button issues. There are people among the Republicans in the legislature that no matter what Barack Obama would have proposed, would find a way of trying to sideline it. And obviously, you know, Affordable Care Act becomes one of those. This became an issue of pragmatism versus politics. The governor saw it in strictly financial terms. Here's the deal. She fought in court to have the Affordable Care Act declared unconstitutional. The U.S. Supreme Court said no. The one thing they did say is states don't have to join. Left it as an option. Federal government says, okay, here's the deal. If you expand your Medicaid to what's essentially an adjusted figure of 138% of the federal poverty level, we will pick up most of the cost. We will give you $1.6 billion. You only have to contribute about $240 million. And she found a way to get the hospitals, who were interested in reducing their uncompensated care, to kick in the $240. She said, to me, that's a no-brainer. For some of the other Republicans, it came down to their own pragmatism. You've got people who represent rural areas. They're watching hospitals close because of uncompensated care. And so they made a pragmatic decision. For a lot of the other Republicans, it was a question of politics, philosophy, can the federal government afford this? And in the end, the Democrats, who clearly wanted expanded coverage, united with the Republican pragmatists and the governor and formed a de facto majority. But I don't think it can last. And I think it's going to end up that the Republicans who did side with the Democrats on most other issues, as they did this session, are going to side with the Republican majority.
Now, are there some of them that may not return? We were talking earlier about the possibility of those being primaried. That's a verb now, by the way. And if you don't know what that means Republicans seeking out other Republicans who are more to the right of incumbents to try to beat them in a primary.
Oh, I think that's definitely going to happen. Heather Carter, who was carrying the Medicaid expansion bill from the governor, already has a primary foe more than a year out. I think that people like Ethan Orr, who's a Tucson Republican living in a split district, is going to have a problem to his right. What the voters think, hard to say. As you well know.
And again, we're talking by voters. In this case, we're only talking about Republican primary voters.
And that's the key. The fact is that with a primary in late August, only the most committed turn out, or perhaps the people who should be committed.
And that's true anyway.
Yes.
In primaries.
And so you've got a situation that in some ways it's, you'll excuse the expression, the wackadoodles from both parties who tend to come out. they tend to choose the nominees for the parties. Then by the time the general election rolls around, you know, if you've got a Republican-dominated district, whoever the Republicans nominated gets elected. There aren't enough Democrats, and vice versa, which is part of the reason you have this particular extremism. And it also is part of the reason that if you have Republican precinct committee men and committee women who want to get rid of a quote-unquote moderate, which is a dirty word in the GOP.
Or Obama supporter, right? You supported Obamacare. You voted for Obamacare in the Arizona State Legislature. That seems to me to be the likely smell of a campaign.
Well, what's funny is even the governor, recognizing the toxicity of that term, put out a press release saying, this isn't Obamacare. Well, I'm sorry, Governor, you're wrong. This is a key part of Obamacare. But they recognize the toxicity of that among certain elements of the Republican Party, and they're going to do everything they can to paint the people, the Republicans, the nine in the House and the five in the Senate, as Obama supporters, and do what they can to get rid of them. Now, one of them, a couple of them are not coming back anyway. I mean, you've got people like Rich Crandall who says, hey, I'm going to go and become the education superintendent in another state. But for a lot of the other folks, they're going to have a real difficult primary.
Well, Jim, I want to bring you into this. We were talking before the show, and you think that the whole fire situation in Yarnell has changed the climate.
I think the hostility that we've seen in the past few weeks between some of the Republicans and some of the Republicans and some being upset with the governor, we may not hear about that for a while. The dynamic may have changed. I think the state's focus right now, and probably rightfully so, is not the, you know, two sides going back and forth. I think when you lose 19 firefighters, I think this affected the whole state, all four corners of the state, and now is not the time for the political infighting. I think that maybe they can, you know, put that to rest. How long that lasts? Now,
that'd be my question. I agree with you in the immediate context, but this is June, and frankly, the legislature is not in session.
Right.
We don't have the hint of a special session. We seem to be in a situation where we're going to move on and nothing need happen till around next January.
Yeah.
And the question is, what do you think we look like then? All right. Do you think the impact of this fire and all the sort of good feeling around coming together can last that long?
I don't think the effects of this tragedy will end for a long time. I mean, it could take years. Certainly in the Prescott area, that's going to take years to recover from this. I think what's going to be interesting next January is, you know, she has pushed through. I mean, her signature moment until the Medicaid was SB 1070. Then came Medicaid, and, you know, she made it very clear early on in the legislative session she was going to push it, she wasn't going to back off of it, and she ended up winning it.
We'll be back with both Jim Cross and Howie Fisher and talk further on the question of whether the legislature can get together, whether they can get together with the governor again. This is the Think Tank on KTAR 92.3.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
As always, for more fun and goodness with Dr. Mike O'Neill, you can go to his day job. He's got a website over there, too, Marketing and Public Opinion Research, O'NeillResearch.com. With us today, Howie Fisher from Capital Media Services and Jim Cross from our very own KTAR newsroom, fresh off the Yarnell fire. This week, 100% contained. Big hey, thank goodness. And once again, Jim, thank you for your coverage of that, and thank you for all that you have done. But you were in the snake's nest when the state legislature was in session, and you saw some of the good, the bad, and the ugly with the governor's proposed, at the time, Medicaid expansion, and now passed.
Yeah, the last few hours of that on, I was watching it, following it closely on Twitter, that got ugly. Several of the tweets, and there was a lot of venom down there among some of the Democrats and some of the Republicans, and it was fascinating theater to watch, like I said, via Twitter and some on Facebook.
Well, one of the interesting things on Twitter was the governor herself sent out a tweet, because what happened is Kathy Herod and some of the anti-abortion forces wanted some language put in they said would restrict funding for abortion. And they were trying to peel off votes. And the governor sent out a tweet saying that it's really unfortunate when some people try to bludgeon, her words, other lawmakers. And when it's reached that level that the governor is undermining somebody who's normally an ally, then you know something new has happened.
And bludgeon is an emotionally lading word.
I'm
wondering, in the hallways, you can clean it up a little bit, if you will, but did it get more extreme in the hallways than that?
Oh, it definitely did. I mean, on that issue, on the election issue, where you had lawmakers yelling at each other because they wanted to change the election law, feelings got run very raw. This was a particularly long session. They're supposed to be out of there.
But let me interrupt on that on that point. Feelings got raw. Now, you've been down there, I think, 30 years plus, if I remember. Put that on a scale of past legislative final sessions. Was this over the top by that standard?
It was worse than average. I hate to say it was the worst I've seen, because we've had some long sessions. We've actually had the legislature go into July and everyone pretend we didn't start a new fiscal year. We're not without a budget. Mm-hmm. So there have been other years where it's gotten raw. This one seemed to be particularly out in the open, with lawmakers growling at each other, not only in the halls, but actually on the floor in front of the public, in front of the folks who are watching on the World Wide Web, and a lot of name-calling. And that gets back to sort of what you were talking about. How do you put that behind you?
And that's sort of was the premise of this show, because as I'm somebody who's not physically down there, I only see that which gets reported in the media or tweeted. And from that perspective, this seemed to be over the top. I can't remember. Maybe the Meekum impeachment got up in there, but that didn't have the internecine warfare of the intra-party kind of venom.
Well, actually, you did have some intra-party stuff in that, because there were Republicans who said, why are we picking on Ev? He is ours. And there were hurt feelings of that for some time, going for years. Now, we're going to see some of the fallout of that, I think that there's what this shows is that in certain situations you can build coalitions, but it has to be very, I hate to say very unique because it's sort of redundant, but they have to be special situations. You can do it. They did it during the Napolitano administration, where the then Democratic governor managed to craft enough Republicans in the Republican-controlled legislature for things they wanted. Back in the 1980s, you talk about my time down here, you had situations where there were enough Republicans who were so far to the right that other members of their own party rejected them and formed a coalition with the Democrats
now
to put together a
budget.
Now
the marginalized group, though, and I want to bring Jim in, and now the marginalized group seems to be the more centrist Republicans, or pro-business Republicans, if you like, the ones who went along with the governor on this particular issue.
Yeah, I mean, this Medicaid issue had, huge support from the business community. And there were, a group of Republicans that joined forces with the Democrats to, push this over the top. I mean, this was a fight, as Howie will tell you, in the Senate. It was a fight in the House. It was a fight among Republicans and some Republicans and the Democrats. I mean, this had all kinds of interesting dynamics on it. It was fascinating theater to watch. It really was.
But what Jim is touching on, and we've seen this before, is there are really two Republican parties in some ways in Arizona.
And nationally, I think it's the same too.
You do have the pro-business folks. Now, it's always fascinating to have a party whose platform is less government interference, who want to license and regulate everything. And that's more the traditional business Republicans. I mean, we had a group of music therapists who came in to be licensed this year. And it was only because the governor vetoed it that they didn't have that. Then they have the ideologue, libertarian, I'm not going to quite call them Ayn Rand Republicans, but the intellectually pure group. Now, then you also have segregation in there in terms of some other issues that tend to split them on situations.
Well,
you got the
religious group as well. If you're going to take the libertarians, they are not the religious.
But I think when it comes down to it, though, when it all comes down to it, is everybody fights. When a piece of good legislation is there, like we saw this expansion, I think the common sense prevailed in this. And I think that they were grandstanding for the most part to their constituents. They knew it was a good piece of legislation, and they passed it accordingly.
Well, but, at the risk, maybe I'm trying to be too much of a journalist and not say whether Medicaid expansion is good or bad. I understand why it makes financial sense. But there is an argument to be made that as the federal government takes on more and more, you cannot continue a situation where 50 cents out of every dollar we're spending is borrowed, much of it from overseas. And so there comes a point where we have to say, what is the role of government? And maybe that's a philosophical question. But there is a question about the role of government, the federal government and the state government.
But the Democrats and the Republicans come down quite differently in terms of when they get concerned about that.
Well,
the
of
Republicans
course.
Only seem to be concerned about expanding government when some of that money might go to social welfare.
Well, but it's the same thing in terms of what's the role of government. You know, the Democrats don't want government in the bedrooms. The Republicans do. The Republicans don't want government overly regulating businesses and maybe checking out the scales from weights and measures, and the Democrats do. So take it from there.
Interesting turnabout, though, on the issue of national security and government intrusion, where traditionally the Republicans have been the party of intrusion or go anywhere in the name of national security. Now with President Obama, I've seen survey data on that. There's a lot of very conservative Republicans all of a sudden who are troubled by that.
Well, that's also a fascinating issue. And that goes to the whole issue. And Jim's seen this in the legislature, too. There isn't a left or right. It's a circle. And the far left and the far right come to meet. We've seen it over the years with some of the legislators we've covered, going back to the 1980s with somebody like a Jim Skelly, who was very libertarian, who said, you know, I don't believe we need to regulate barbers. Nobody's going to die from a bad haircut. And so a lot of the libertarians on both ends are very concerned. They say, well, we understand the war on terror to the extent that it exists. Do they really need to know how many times I've called KTAR during the day? Come on.
All right, guys, I'm going to cut you off there for a moment. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more on the fallout in the Arizona legislature over a list of topics, if you will, right here on News Talk 92.3 KTA.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
I'll turn my microphones on just for fun, like I'm new here. Jeez. All right, welcome back. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. We want to thank Jim Cross for stopping by right out of our own KTAR newsroom, but remaining with us, it's like a game of Survivor. Howie Fisher from the Capital Media Services. We want to talk about Jan Brewer and Jan Brewer's relationship with the Republican Party here in the state after her Medicaid expansion, basically welcoming in Obamacare and freaking out the Republican Party. Can she repair this?
Well, we actually have some history to show that it can be repaired. Back in 2010, after the governor became governor, when Janet Napolitano hightailed it off to Washington, she inherited a very large budget deficit. And there were lawmakers down there, Republicans, who said, it's very simple. We cut $3 billion out of spending. Well, you cut $3 billion out of $10 billion, and it's real hard to run the state. And she said, look, I'm willing to cut $1 billion. I'm willing to borrow $1 billion. But we need the revenues. And she pushed through, over the objections of many of her own members, a ballot measure to have a temporary hike in the 1 cent sales tax.
Kind of a precursor to her position on Medicare.
In a lot of ways, it was a precursor on Medicaid because of the fact that she looked at it as a pragmatist. You know, for all the talk, you know, of the governor being some crazy conservative, and certainly she developed a reputation over Senate Bill 1070, and she cultivated that reputation.
Oh,
she rode that
pony to national prominence.
Yes. But if you looked at her, I've covered the governor since she was elected in 1982, and she was never that doctrinaire. She's always been, in some ways, a pragmatist, and some of that has to do with her own experiences of having kids in school, of things going on with her own family. And she looked at it and said, I am not willing to cripple state government over some philosophical issue here. And she built it, and she got the vote on it that she wanted, and she took it to the street, and by a 2-to-1 margin, the voters of Arizona agreed with her. Now, there were a lot of people in her own party who were very annoyed with her. They came back around. They worked with her since 2010, and it will happen again. They recognize, you know, you look for your allies, and they say, "What, you know, so we've got Jan Brewer or what?" Now, we might like a different governor. We might like to have Doug Ducey as governor if, in fact, he runs next year, or Ken Bennett as governor. But the fact is, this is the governor we've got, and we're going to have to work with her.
Now, and she's talking like an adult, though, right? Well, I mean, it sounds like she's talking like a grown-up if she said, I'm not going to cripple something. I'm going to do what's right for the state.
She had to balance the checkbook, and she knew that. And I think she looked at it and said, I can cut here and there, and you know, when we're in the crunch, but only within certain constraints or else really horrible thing happen. Now, I want to move us forward now. The governor has a year plus left in her term. She has one major legislative session coming up. I look at the agenda. I think the immigration issue and border security at the state level has run its course. She's won her victory on Medicaid. That would appear to be over in terms of legislative action. I know we're talking about some possible initiatives to deal with that. But in terms of a fight with the legislature, and I'm looking, she's got 1 year left in her term, and I think we all discount the claim she makes that the term limits doesn't apply. I think it clearly does. I've yet to hear an attorney not in her employ who claimed that. So let's fast forward to 2014. We've had these primaries. Maybe some survive, maybe they don't. But she's going now. What do you see on her agenda? You know, for state of the state, or this is what I want to do. As in effect, I'm on my way out.
I think her legacy in her mind is putting the state back onto financial footing. And she believes she can do that with tax cuts, incentives, and other ways of encouraging businesses to hire people and to spend money. You know, she's already kind of sketched this out. You know, if you listen to the canned introduction that her staff prepares for folks, how she inherited this $3 billion budget deficit, that we have a balanced budget. Well, we're not quite there yet. Actually, if you really look at the books, we're actually still spending more than we're taking in, but we're using some of the leftover from that sales tax.
And we've lost the sales tax. Some of the money got spent and some of the money got put in the bank to tide us over.
Yes.
So now the revenue stream is no longer there, and the money that was put away for leftovers is being quickly depleted.
Yes. Her belief, whether you want to call it trickle-down economics or whatever, is that if you can best stimulate the economy by getting businesses to come here. Now, some of that is done on an ad hoc basis. In other words, we have the Commerce Authority give $3 million to a specific company in incentives in infrastructure development. But some of it comes from lower tax rates. For example, one of the bills that she signed this session deals with depreciation. If you're a business person and you buy something, there's something called Section 179 of the Internal Revenue Code that essentially allows you to write off instantly $500,000 of what you spend.
And let me explain what that is, because I think I run a business. I know what that is.
Yes.
That says if I buy a $10,000 piece of equipment, normally I depreciate it, which means I can't deduct the whole $10,000. I can deduct a fraction of that every year over an extended period of time. Section 179 says I can take that whole $10,000. If I've made $10,000 in other profit, I can take that as an offset against it immediately. So in effect, it's an encouragement to businesses to buy stuff because you get an immediate write-off on it.
Now, the state, however, has not conformed in that area. And in fact, the maximum state instant 179 equivalent was $25,000. Well, one of the bills she signed says we're going to allow instant depreciation equivalent to the Section 179. We're going to conform to the federal code there. Her belief, and this goes to her core, is that if we can convince businesses to buy, they will buy new equipment, which also generates sales tax if they're using it there as opposed to reselling it. That if they buy new equipment, that means more people being hired, that increases the economy. This is, I think, her legacy. This is what she's thinking about. She's thinking about, how do I really have a structurally balanced budget? How do we pay off early the fact that the House and Senate buildings are mortgaged, where the legislature meets? You know, can we pay off all that
debt? This was that gimmickry that we went through 3 years ago when the economy was collapsing. And as you said, we borrowed a billion, we cut a billion, and we taxed a billion.
Yes.
This is the borrowed part where we're in the payback situation.
Exactly. And I think that's her legacy. Now, that doesn't mean she doesn't have other issues. This governor is a very adamantly anti-abortion governor. And in general, she has signed various bills to restrict abortion.
But she vetoed a couple of this time.
She vetoed a couple of this time because they got in the way of her larger agenda this year, which was Medicaid. You know, she vetoed a bill to essentially try to put onto the Medicaid what a court had previously struck down, which is a restriction against using Medicaid dollars for any organization that also performs abortions. A federal judge, a very conservative federal judge in town named Anil Wake, said, no, that's not the way federal Medicaid law works. And since most of the money for family planning is coming from the federal government, you cannot do that. And the governor said, I'm not going to endanger Medicaid for that. But the fact is she signed a limit on 20 weeks on abortion, nothing beyond that. Now, that's on hold in federal court. She also signed the bill making it illegal to have an abortion based on the race or the gender of the child.
Well, what's left? I mean, that's what she did do. What is there on the anti-abortion agenda that could be proposed that could be in the agenda for 2014?
New restrictions. I think that that if, in fact, the 20-week abortion is allowed, I think they may even go back before that. There are laws in some other states in terms of where you can have an abortion. Does it have to be as a surgical center? Who gets to perform it? And I think that it's that the agenda of people like the Center for Arizona Policy is incremental, little by little by little, and then eventually they can close it off, or at least get a case before the U.S. Supreme Court to challenge Roe versus Wade. That's the agenda.
You're seeing Texas-style litigation that basically ostensibly puts more requirements on these centers, but in effect is an attempt to shut them down.
Exactly.
Anything else? We have just 30 seconds.
Well, I think that there are certain other social issues out there dealing with religious freedom that are of concern to her. But I think it really does come down to her business, and that she wants to stimulate business, and she wants to do it by lowering taxes.
We'll be back to wrap things up. This is the Think Tank on KTAR 92.3.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
All right, Howie Fisher is with us. Howie, I know Doc O'Neill has one more question for you. Usually we put a nice bow on the show at the end of this, but we wanted to keep you around through the break, and we appreciate you sticking around with us. I know the Supreme Court, there might be some state issues that have to deal with their recent decisions.
Yes, there were two big decisions and one that people forget about. The simplest one is the California Prop 8 case, which had to do with who gets to challenge the California Constitutional Amendment, who gets to defend it. That clearly only affects California. Now, where it gets interesting is with the DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, where the court said that it is a state's rights issue, which is a fascinating term given the Republicans in the state, to decide who can marry. Now, where it gets interesting.
And to put this in perspective, DOMA, which was signed ironically by President Clinton,
yes,
basically was preemptive in terms of the federal government telling the states that there's all kinds of stuff you can't do.
Exactly. And this dealt strictly with the issue of whether people get federal benefits, you know, whether it's inheritance or joint tax returns and things like that. Now, here's where it gets interesting for a place like Arizona, which is the next fight. You get married in New York legally as a gay couple. You can file jointly there. You get inheritance. You can get divorced there. You move to Arizona. What happens? The question that I think the tax folks are arguing now is, do you continue to get to file a joint return, or do you have to go back to filing two single returns? That's the next legal fight coming, because it goes to the other issue of DOMA, of whether states have to recognize other states' marriages.
And one of the principles of federalism from the beginning was that states will, in general, give full faith and credit to the actions of other states.
Not only that, you have a U.S. constitutional amendment in terms of interstate commerce that you do honor each other state's contract. So I think that's the next challenge. Now, the third one, which is specific to Arizona, is what the Supreme Court didn't take up. Back in the Napolitano administration, they made a rule that said you can extend the benefits that normally go to your employees for their spouses to the domestic partners of the spouses. Brewer comes in, the Republican legislature comes in and says, we don't want to do that, and so they took away all domestic partner benefits. Lambda Legal came in on behalf of only the gay employees and said, well, wait, you've created a physical impossibility for us. You've said you can have the benefits if you marry. But we have a constitutional amendment approved by voters saying you cannot get married. The federal judge threw it out. Ninth Circuit threw it out, said you have to continue providing the benefits. And the U.S. Supreme Court, the day after doing DOMA, said we're not going to review that. So for the moment, that's the law of the land, and Arizona will continue providing those domestic partner benefits.
And it sounds like grist for more litigation. Is it going to be grist for more legislation, do you think?
Oh, I think you can never overestimate the number of morality bills that come up. We had the quote-unquote bathroom bill this year about who gets to use which bathroom with which icon on the door, and is it, you know, transgender or you know, whatever it is, you know, gender identity. There are always people who think they know what's best. Now, I understand there are reasons that perhaps you do have morality laws. All laws are basically moral laws. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. But the question becomes, at what point is it the role of the state to determine morality? Abortion certainly will be back.
And this is one of the most interesting and pervasive continuing distinctions between facets of the Republican Party. We have the libertarians who tend to want less government all around. And then we have this uneasy alliance with the religious conservatives who want to see the government playing moral policeman.
Well, you also have, even within the contingencies of the Democratic Party, there are some Democrats who, for religious reasons or cultural reasons, are in fact anti-abortion. And depending on the issue, they will also split with the party. So the coalitions form where the coalitions form.
And this was some of the, I think, unreasonable, but it was a hope of the Republicans that this might be their entree into some of the Hispanic vote.
Well, I think that's it. Obviously, they've got bigger fish to fry in terms of what's happening right now in Washington. If the House kills any chance of immigration reform, I think that they might as well forget about it. Now, of course, in Arizona, all politics is local. And, you know, there will be Latinos who will look around and say, OK, who is best representing my interests here? And it becomes situational.
Well, thank you, Howie Fisher.
You're very welcome.
You have been a mainstay at the legislature for 30 some odd years. I think about the full length of time that I've been here since 79. And if you want to know what's really going on in the legislature, look for the byline Capital Media Services and Howie Fisher.
All right, Doc. I'd say right out of the gates, Howie did bring up a point. He did say there are more that bonds the state Republicans that divide them. I look at the Medicaid debate. I look at even back in we talk about abortion, SB 1070, whatever it was. I always saw the Republican Party as still a unified front, maybe an argumentative family, but a family nonetheless. Do you really think that this has actually broken that family up in any way?
I think that what will probably become dominant, though, I think there's going to be some hard feelings. If you have people trying to take out people's careers by beating them in a primary, there's going to be some underlying resentment. But I think my biggest takeaway from Howie's observation is that if the number one issue is going to be further tax cuts to stimulate business, then that will be an issue which will tend to unite rather than divide Republicans. Now, whether or not that is feasible, however, I think is dependent upon a continuing economic recovery. And it's interesting because I remember when Janet Napolitano was governor, I had a conversation with her on just the same point. And she was explaining how she could grow certain programs without going to the legislature for a tax increase. And back then, we had an economy that was growing so fast. Her perspective was, all I have to do is keep the Republicans from slashing taxes, and we will have money available to do various things. I think what Howie's suggestion is, if the governor is going to go and try to propose tax decreases, I think that will likely be contingent upon an economy that really starts to take off.
Okay, but I hear what you're saying, and I agree with it for the most part. But I want to, but the family itself, the family of the Republican Party, Broken up? Divorced? Heading to counseling? Where are we?
A lot of tension, I guess.
Okay.
I guess
all
we
right.
just
a little
had a
dysfunction,
fight,
maybe?
And there's been a kind of a knife fight, and there's some bleeding
a knife
wounds.
Fight? Okay. Where did you grow up? Jeez. I mean, my sister and I went to blows every now and again, but a knife? Come on now.
There's some open wounds there, but I think the healing period is, this is July. We have 6 months before anybody has to do anything. We're going to go through a period when people can cool their heels and talk about what they agree upon. And most of these issues that are still on the agenda that Howie set forth don't seem to be ones that are likely to divide Republicans, at least not in the fractious way that Medicare did.
I read an article the other day called The Divided States of America. And it was talking, it's right in your wheelhouse. Yeah. This was opinion polls. I don't know if you got to see it, but they were talking about on a national level. They said, in our history, there has been no more unifying event, no one event, than 9/11.
Yeah.
Let's take it down to our level here
on
the state.
Pearl Harbor kind of ended.
It was overwhelming.
Prior to Pearl Harbor, there was a huge, by the way, mostly Republican isolationist wing of the Republican Party that didn't want anything to do with foreign wars.
That itself, they were saying overwhelmingly, of any event stacked on top of each other, 9/11 was the most unifying. On a state level, do you think that what we just experienced in Yarnell and 19 firefighters, do you think that would have a similar effect on the Republican Party as we look? Everybody seemed to have been holding hands and singing Kumbaya, at least for the time being.
I think I disagree with Jim on this one. I don't think it has that degree of staying. We may feel that now momentarily.
Okay.
But I can't see that persisting to any significant period of time enough to impact policy.
From what I was actually up there in Prescott for a couple of days, and let me tell you something. It was pretty impactful. It was very emotional, and I think that we'll see.
I agree with the intensity, but I'm talking about how long it lasts. We have a very short attention span.
We do, and I think that might work in the Republicans' favor as well. They might have a short attention span. Time heals all wounds.
It wounds all heals as well.
I see what you've done there. This has been another edition of the Think Tank. Dr. Mike O'Neill, Howie Fisher was with us from the Capital Media Services. Jim Cross, right from our KTR newsroom. We'll be back next week on the Think Tank. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.